Let's go.
What's up, everybody? We're back with another edition of the Ad Podcast. And today is one of my favorite show formats where we actually in person with some founders at their office. We're here at the world headquarters of Los Cuernos Quine here in Carlsbad, California with Corey Asink and Zeke Blatter, the co-CEOs of Los Cuernos Wine. And Los Cuernos Wine is a super exciting direct-to-consumer wine company that is the first of its kind to actually put good, drinkable wine in a can. So Corey and Zeke, thanks so much for coming on the show, guys.
Yes.
Yes, excited to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. I like the sound of the global headquarters.
Yeah, right?
We're good with it.
All right, guys. So take me back to the origin story. So you guys have known each other for a really long time. You guys have been friends. You've come up through the restaurant industry, and then you've been involved in the wine and spirits and cannabis space for over 20 years. Tell us a little bit about your backgrounds, and we'll get into what was the problem that you guys were looking to solve in launching this brand.
I could put up the picture of Zeke as the best man at my wedding 19 years ago, but I think we'll spare you. And I think Zeke will start and maybe kind of go even before that, just for some context. That's cool.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, no, I think you definitely add the picture at some point. So we met in September 2001, in fact.
Wow.
And so that would have been almost 23 years ago. In a fine dining restaurant, it had like 1,500 wines on the list, and it fancy white tablecloth. You had to wear a coat, some tie, and you had to take a test on the cheeses, the pastas, food. So it was a serious place. You had to study. I had to study all these cheeses, all these pastas, and the food, and then. Then obviously this restaurant sold a ton of wine. It's called Opera, won numerous Wine Spectator Awards, with the Golden Bacchus Award. So chef-driven, renowned restaurant. And then Corey and I were the younger servers there. I've kind of working our way up. And the way to move up there was to learn about wine. In fact, we worked for Chris Levine, who's a advanced sommelier, just a brilliant wine mind and tried so many, so he was teaching us as we were learning. So we would pour out four or five wines every night. We're reading books and, you know, financially motivated, but also we just kind of picked up this passion for it. As you start talking to people about wines from Italy, wines from France, wines from Spain, wines from Napa, wines from Sonoma Pass, so you're getting all of these different wines together, and then someone walks in. And during the time that they sit down, we are working with them to give them a great experience, like with the wine and food. So that's kind of where my end goal was. And that's how, by the way, Corey was really good too. So here's the other part. If you're a really good server, this is the great part, you have a back waiter and then you have someone stationed next to you. So I'm not gonna say this is the truth. If someone is not good, then their customers are kind of looking at you like, hey, I need some help. I need this for
you. You can feel it.
Wow.
And so, like, Corey wasn't the only good one, but there was like two or three that if I worked alongside them, all the customers would get a great experience. They're getting elevated. They're actually spending more money baking for us for the experience. So that was, I think, my first interaction with Corey was, okay, this guy's pretty good. And so... So on his shifts and my shifts, and we started working together, we could literally elevate a section of the restaurant.
That's
just
awesome.
Being two ways, elevate the sales and the experience of the restaurant. We already had really good food and great audience.
That's
kind of how I never told you that.
No, that's cool. No, I appreciate it. I mean, like going even back before that, he's from IB. I thought he was going to go there. He's from Imperial Beach. It's okay. In San Diego.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of... Finishing up on your question about backgrounds, my I have a very non-traditional background, but it started in Texas. I'm from Texas, and kind of went to school there. And then afterwards, I came out to LA, and I was in the entertainment kind of industry for a while. But probably no surprise to you or anyone listening, but the whole entertainment kind of industry, kind of actor thing, and working at restaurants or the service industry kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, right. Either you become like an assistant in the industry so you can get access to people, or you do something in service because you can make good money and then focus on your craft.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the flexibility and then the cash.
Yeah.
So that kind of is where we kind of, you know, met at the restaurant right after I had moved from Texas. And he had been up in Long Beach, kind of from San Diego. And then it didn't take long. You know, I still did my thing in LA for a while as I was still kind of ingrained in the wine industry in parallel, a large part. And then it wasn't too long until we both went to kind of the distributor and
corporate
side. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So imagine you learned a ton in those experiences through working with the distributors that you worked with. You guys had an opportunity to kind of team up in some other verticals that are calling on similar accounts and grocery and stuff like that. So should we skip right ahead to, you know,
sure.
Yeah, so let's get into the Los Cuernos side of things. So Zeke, I think we talked that, you know, you'd had this idea in your head for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that you just thought of last year when you started this company. What was kind of the convergence of issues you were seeing in the industry that made you think that, you know, kept you up at night essentially with a problem that was big enough to where you were willing to, you know, take a step out of your corporate success? I mean, you ran massive teams on the West Coast for Juul. You were in the cannabis industry as an executive. So you had plenty of opportunities to continue your career on the corporate side. What was that big hairy problem that was just, you know, keeping you up at night that you wanted to solve and go out and do a startup?
Yeah, and I'll do one step back when I jumped in. So I did work on the retail side at a couple of stores. So I got to see a lot of customers walk in buying product in two different neighborhoods. Then working on the restaurant side and then from the distributor side. So when you're selling wine to restaurants and retail, you're trying to basically pick wine that their customers are going to enjoy, but also they can make money off of. And so got to work with a lot of brands in spirits and in wine. So I'd work with Crystal Coffee, Crystal Beer, you know, Fireball, Don Julio, Bullet Bourbon, Tito's. And you get to see kind of how they go to market, how they execute.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, like, wine did change my life. Like, getting to know about wine allowed me to make money and move up restaurants and then essentially go to these billion-dollar distributors and have a lot of success there. So we knew that wine was actually getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were drinking wine in the mid-90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of Napa Sonoma on wines by the glass list, and that has changed. And so the quality's gone down. It's not necessarily anyone's fault. It's the whole industry, the stakeholders. The bottle pieces have had a piece of it, the glasses, the restaurant, the industry. And the restaurants had to make a certain margin point as costs went up. So eventually the customer just got forgot about. And during this boom time, everyone was buying wine. Wine has had a couple of declines, and really the baby boomers have been driving the category. So here we are, it's 2014. We already knew this problem existed. We're like, how can we get people to drink more wine or drink wine without it being so complicated or getting a better product? So we started looking at, we wanted to do white and red blends at first. The thought was we could get a better price point on certain red and white blends from Central Coast. And then that evolved to certain varietals. And we picked up Petite Syrah in 2014 as a varietal that could make sense for a great red blend. And so him and I continue to talk about this wine company. We have images and pictures going back and forth, even though we're living in different states. I'm living in Illinois, he's in San Diego.
So going back and forth to Lodi, and actually you're at this point trying to figure out where are you going to source the grapes and who are you going to work with from a winemaker perspective.
I think if you go back, there's a lot of people that I told were going to do this in like 12, 13, 14, 16, 17. And so I got to the point like, when are we going to actually do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then about 3 years ago, we were out marketing. And we're like, all right, we want to do this in bottles all the time. Again, get better wine, great wine, more accessible, I mean, less complicated access points at a fair price.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're like, let's do cans because we can lower the cost, we can make a better product, and then there's a different distribution footprint that doesn't exist. And so we decided then, and then I quit my job last year, and we went all in doing this thing, and you know, raising money at 22 is very scary.
Yeah, sure.
Dylan, your question about kind of the winemaker in Gerardo, we'll get there, because it's like a very critical part. But like, kind of where Zeke was, we hadn't even thought about that yet.
Yeah,
we knew we were going to need a winemaker.
Yeah, that's essentially... That's just what goes in the can. Everything else, you know, the business model and the marketing and the brand, that was almost more important than what was going
to
go inside.
Yeah, well, actually, to us, the thing that was most important to us, that was exposed to us from, you know, even back in our restaurant days, through the whole thing, was instead of looking at wine like through the perspective or paradigm of like the traditional industry or the old way of doing it or like, you know, the formal rules way, we just took a fresh approach to look at it from the consumer's standpoint. So we took it from the consumer and then worked backwards. And a lot of that was so evident to us because we would just get punched. We're wine lovers, we're wine guys, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we could be at our fancy restaurant, or we can go to any fancy restaurant and, you know, buy a, you know, I don't know, $1,200 bottle of Celaya or a, you know, name the bottle wine with the insane, you know, kind of markup oftentimes. but for us as wine lovers, like, we also love enjoying wine with, like, at a taco shop.
Yeah, right.
Or, like, at a ramen spot.
Yeah.
Or, like, at a Padres game.
Yeah. Or
right?
At the beach or on a hike or
right.
You know,
and so like even you know at like the smaller concept restaurants, we don't need to kind of get into this, but I think I think we should mention it because it was so often we'd go there and even though they would have beer, oftentimes they wouldn't even have wine, or if they did, I want to tell this story about kind of like the house wine. But essentially wine lovers are just we would just be getting punished.
Yeah.
Aside from any traditional kind of restaurants that have traditional wine,
like the high end type
stuff.
Other
than that,
wine
lovers just get punished.
Yeah, like, you know, San Diego is the brew pub capital of the world, right? We have more microbreweries. It's a huge thing that people like to do on the weekends. But, you know, sometimes, especially the women, don't want to drink microbreweries. They want to drink wine. And what's the option for them?
Yeah, this is a great story. I read a story about the guy who invented this protein bar, and he was eating the Power Bar. I don't know if anyone remembers the Power Bar.
Yeah.
It was this thin strip of like oatmeal grossness, and he chewed it, he threw it on the ground. He goes, I'm tired of this.
This is the story of the founder of Cliff Bar, right? I think I read
okay.
that book.
Okay. All right. So this is for us.
Probably interviewed him on a podcast.
And this literally just happened to me, a restaurant right down the street here.
Wow.
And they have like 8 beers and they're good. And I said, how's your wine? Because I knew there was just 3 choices. And she right away put her head down. She's like, you probably don't want to order that. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, all the stuff about how good their food is, how good their beer is, and literally I ask them how the wine, she goes, so we call this the house wine shrug. Wherever we'll go, how's your wine? And they'll go, but you know, how's your food? It's amazing. We get these source ingredients. We get this and this. How's the beer? Oh, we got 8 taps. We also have these local RTDs. How's the wine? And it was just that moment for us where it's almost like we're playing chicken. Like, I see that cheap plastic bottle. I know how much it costs. He's looking at me. He's like, you like wine? I go, yeah, that's your choice. And I'm like, well, I don't want to drink that. So I just get a beer and he's like, yeah, I got you. So that problem exists everywhere. And like what I say is wine's been around for 6,000 years. It's been passed from generation to generation. It's just in this recent generation where they ruined it.
Mm.
So as someone that we're stewards of wine, that love wine, and we're just making it more available.
Yeah.
And that was it there. So you mentioned something I want to talk about, like the quality of the wine was the moment for us. So yes, we definitely had to pick a different route to market, a different container, because that allowed from a cogs and business perspective to make succeed. But as a wine salesperson, and he's been one, if I give this to somebody, they have to, one, be able to sell it, and then I also want them to be able to give it to someone else that's going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I know, and he knows, we've tasted literally tens of thousands of wines, and we know in our mind, like, our price point, like, all right, this costs this much.
So you can just taste it and be like, oh, that's a $20 glass.
Yeah, that's $20, that's $15, that's how much you sell for. Yeah. And for us, yeah, there was this moment where we bought him all these wines, we wrote all these notes, and then he made his adjustments, our winemaker, and then we tried the wine, and like, I won't even lie, I was dead serious nervous, and in my mind I said, if this thing's not good, we're screwed. And to be honest, and like, look, we're out in the open about this, like, send me a message, out, like, we tried it, I was like, okay, like, this is above what we thought we could do, and that's because the way we did it was non-vintage, and our winemaker is amazing. And so now we have this amazing product. It's going to be fresh, consistent. So now our job is just to get it out and try to put it more occasions. So that's the next challenge for us.
I love it. So tell me a little bit more about the brand. You know, what does Los Cuernos mean to you guys? Why was that the brand? You know, tell me a little bit about the brand identity and where you guys kind of came up with it.
Do you want to go on this one or talk to Manny?
Sure. I mean, Los Cuernos is a strong name for starters.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot more to it, but essentially it evokes the concept of kind of farm.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of the hub of where great food and wine
farm to table
are cultivated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, the association of like food, whether it's like a burrito or a taco or whatever it is, it was, that's why we chose it.
I love it. So let's talk about the go-to-market story. So you guys do your first run, you've got product in hand, you're ready to start hitting the streets. What was it like when you first started talking to accounts, and tell us about some of the early
first of all, we were so excited that after we canned our co-packer in Sacramento, so our winemaker, all our wine productions in Lodi, just think properly, like, finished and aged wine designed specifically for the can. So that's all in, that all takes place in Lodi. And then, you know, 45 minutes up the road, so our supply chain's based up
California through and through.
That's right. That's right. And then after that, like, we couldn't even wait for our product to, like, get shipped to the DCs of our distributor. We're like, so we just found a way to load up our car. So we flew up there. And then we did, we rented like the biggest car we could and loaded it up.
Wow.
And it was such an amazing experience driving it back. Because we just wanted, literally, we couldn't even wait the extra few days.
Yeah.
So it all processed and got to us. So it made for like a really entertaining drive back.
Yeah.
I felt like we were on a boat.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's what so many entrepreneurs struggle is, what's that, you know, that initial, like, people come up with an idea and then it's like going through the manufacturing process and figuring out how to raise enough money to get that first landed product that you can start showing to customers. So I imagine that was a pretty exciting moment. So you get back down here to San Diego, and I love, you know, I think direct consumer brands, you know, nowadays it's very easy to spin up a Shopify and start going in a lot of categories. Obviously, alcohol has a different model based on regulation, right? So you can't just spin up a Shopify and start marketing. So because of the tier three system, you've got to have a distributor, and you guys chose to start locally here in San Diego and get into retail versus, you know, marketing and trying to pull people into you. So what was that experience like, you know, first starting, like getting it out into those first few accounts? Like, what's the story that comes to mind that was when you guys were like, yes, we made it?
I'll probably tell them Gonzo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell the before one that was bad.
That one too.
I think even when we had product, like, even we had the sample product, we gave it out to a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lots of people that we... I mean, literally, I'll get text messages, hey, I'm in a store, can you buy me, what should I buy? So I wanted to try as many people on this product, like wine snobs, wine drinkers, wine lovers, veteran enthusiasts, people that would drink wine. So we got the wine out, we have a lot of relationships, we called a bunch of accounts we knew, and definitely some people would bring us in. I think for me, the moment was scary was we went to this really big Mexican restaurant, friends of ours, and he's like, I love your product, I love the wine, but you know, I'm serving this really bad wine, you know, making a lot of money.
So it was really just kind of thinking about the margin situation, and they weren't really that concerned with the customer experience.
Yeah, and look, I don't think you can blame them completely. Like, if they're used to making 400, 500, 600% for the past 15 years, it's hard, right? It's like if your home value drops by 25%, it might take you 5 years to get used to that. So that was difficult to hear in certain restaurants that it wasn't going to work or that it didn't matter. But you know, I'll let Corey handle this one about like Gonzo Ramen, like these foodie-driven places where they really, really care about kind of the food and the experience. We found that they really do have this option for something that's consistent, fresh, and it's easy for them to work. So, you want to tell what God's
been doing?
That was a great relationship of ours. And basically, he's like, hey, I'm not going to carry a product. And I was 100% sure he was going to carry it.
I think another nuance to call out about kind of this situation is that, you know, going back to your question, is that we quickly learned where we fit. Right?
Did you know QSR on your go to market strategy?
No,
not casual at all. Was that part of the initial plan?
Not necessarily.
Wow.
So because you know, Yosef was talking about this one specific restaurant. I think it's important to note that it's a traditional
server
kind of table service.
Yeah, yeah. So they're
sit down restaurant, right?
Bottles and they're pouring in glasses.
Right. And a lot of that legacy, you know, the margin kind of play of the legacy bottles and that whole markup. There's reasons for it.
There's a little bit of a user experience. You know, somebody brings a bottle to your table, they pour it a little sip, you know, they go through the whole, you know, shebang. And, you know, that's part of the ritual of that, you know, of a sit down restaurant when you're ordering wine.
Yeah. And so for us, we quickly realized like that it didn't necessarily, it wasn't a good fit, or let's put it this way, it's much too soon for that, that type of concept.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, when you look at the smaller concepts that don't have traditional wine programs, Gonzo is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
So the owner-operator, just an unbelievable couple, this great food, super highly renowned ramen spot.
I love that spot.
Oh, okay, Gonzo. So, but think about this. So you've been there. So very small, right?
Yep. Yeah, most of the seats are outside.
Yep. Always a line.
Mm-hmm.
Very small, like, footprint,
high
volume, right?
Though.
Small, like, so when I initially talked to, you know, Jamie about, you know, the wine, as excited as he was for us, he was like, I don't know. They didn't have a wine. We had all this other.
They didn't even have a wine. They were replacing something.
And this is a very, very common theme amongst kind of smaller
QSR, fast casual.
Fast casual.
Even if they have a beer and wine license, they only have beer.
Yeah.
Got it.
Sadly, most of the time.
Wow.
And so it was just a crazy opportunity. I'm like, wait, what? You don't have wine? But his food's amazing. All his other beverages are great. He's got great beer. He did a collab with a local guy. And it's not his fault. It's part of the legacy system that people they're just not used to it. So he was like, I think he made the comment one time. He's like, why does it go to their food? Or whether it was him or we've heard it otherwise, why does it go to our food? Or our customers don't like wine.
Wine's a $70 billion industry, right?
Yeah.
So long and short is he was open to kind of give us a go. And then, it was like he's reordered like 10 times. But it just goes to show it goes back to like, you know, Zeke and I, when we would, you know, go not at our fancy restaurants we worked at, but anywhere else to grab a bite when we wanted a glass of wine, we would just get punished.
Yeah.
Or just give us a chance.
Yep.
Give the wine lover, give the wine drinker a chance.
Yeah, give them another purchase point.
Yeah, but so the single serve is huge, right? So he thought, oh, I need all the bottles, I need to know, I need maybe an educator or a song, I need glassware, and I don't even have, you know, place in my dishwasher.
Yeah.
Like, these are all very practical things that operators go through. And now, look, you get like a great glass and a half of wine in the single serve vessel.
Yeah.
that
just put in the fridge. You
just crack and go.
Yeah.
It's just consistent, delicious every time. So
I love it. I love it. So you found the product fit within the QSR and the fast casual space. Also, I know you guys are doing well in like commissaries of hotels, you know, places where you can kind of grab and go, where, you know, maybe the best options are not available to consumers. So I want to talk a little bit about the marketing, because that's essentially what my audience is normally going to talk about. I'm sure a lot of them are, you know, a lot of the operational guys and beverages are loving the inside baseball, but most of my audience tunes in to hear stories about marketing. So what I was fascinated to learn when I first met you guys is that you guys had already created sponsorship opportunities with two major sports teams, San Jose Sharks and the San Diego Waves. And the San Diego Waves down here in San Diego. Usually sports partnerships come way later in a business's marketing plan. I think it's brilliant because it gives you guys something to talk about. It shows that you guys are investing in the local culture, where you guys are trying to build community and be part of the story. I know you guys have mentioned being able to have like the San Diego Earthquakes jackets on when you walk into accounts, like people see that, they appreciate that. So talk to us a little bit about why did you decide to go after those massive sport partnerships this early in the game, and what's been the result of some of those partnerships?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And you know, you're starting a company and you're getting a lot of advice like, go get this celebrity, get this influencer. And I felt like there's a lot out there with celebrity brands and influencer brands. And then, you know, California is the number one wine market in the entire world. In fact, California is bigger than New York and Texas combined.
Wow.
And so within that, we wanted to target two markets, San Diego and Silicon Valley. So we said, okay, these are the right consumers. We think there's going to be some early adopters here, outdoor lifestyle. And then we looked at celebrities, looked at clones, we looked at bigger teams. But when you look at soccer, like a couple of things come to mind. One, very big in Europe, right? And I would say in South America. So has kind of a European, South American feel, which is heavy into wine culture just already.
Yep.
And then
some association there with the audience. Yeah.
The soccer community and travel community. Corey and I each have three daughters. They're dancers, not soccer players, but it's the same type of thing, right? You get all these parents, you grow, and you're watching kids, you're meeting people. And so it's like, okay, now we're going to be working with our community. We see a lot of our users there, so see a lot of foodies,
yep,
a lot of beverage enthusiasts, and a lot of people that just only drink wine. We call the wine lovers. And so we talked to other sports teams, we're feeling it, we're like, okay, these align with our customer and our values on like community. Like one of our goals or parents is like, I want the communities and the partners to want us to be there. And so like here, this is one of our partners, we're gonna rep them out in the market, they're gonna see us, and it's gonna be like community, team, consumer, company, filling that ecosystem. So that is pretty much why I picked the teams for the soccer influence within the community, and then both unique position companies. The Wave is a little bit of a startup like us.
Yeah.
In their second year, they're kind of on the rise. It's been great. The Earthquakes have 50 years of tradition. This is their anniversary. And you know, let's talk one thing. So take away the record. I think they're like 1-4 right now.
Sure.
Off to a bad start. We just went to the game. Packed house. People loving it. And on one of the games, we saw their star player. The game's totally over. He goes and talks to three different groups and signing autographs, all these kids and doing stuff. And we just look at each other like, that is what it's about.
Yeah,
right?
Accessibility is way different than MLB.
The adults care more about wins and loses and the champ and the GOAT. Like, kids and parents just love to be there in the environment. So that is why we picked those two.
I love it.
So, yeah, it goes back to culture, community, and then the fit. Right, because we're a portable outdoor wine,
yeah.
So I think that's important too. We wanted to choose, partnerships that really highlighted the practical use of our product.
Yeah, and it probably translates downstream to like soccer moms, you know, let's be honest, we know that a couple of them are pouring some wine into the, yes. You know, the travel go Yetis at the kids' soccer games on the weekends.
Oh, that's not water.
Yeah. Coffee or whatever. So, you know, I imagine there's some association with like that core consumer of that, you know, female, call it the chief household officer. You know, they make the decisions. My wife just brought home a case of wine the other day, you know, and, she's the one that makes the purchases around those decisions. So,
well, you nailed it. Yeah. I mean, I wish we could take the credit. It was the Earthquakes team, but like we are the presenting sponsor, like the soccer mom. which is great. It's perfect. So, yeah, we're loving it.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's talk tactical. If I was listening to this, what it did for us to give us instant credibility.
Mm.
So when we walk into accounts and now it says, proud partner of Saving a Wave, official KMI of San Jose. We are a legitimate entity of a brand for a company that started a year ago, right? So from that perspective, it was very strong.
Yeah.
And gave us results with some of the regional change, regional accounts we spoke to.
Yeah, and I've also seen you guys have already integrated that heavily into your point of sale. So
yes.
You guys have these cool, you know, little stickers that you pop
in.
I don't know what those are called. Maybe a little bit inside baseball. I don't know the terminology, but it, you know, it gives you an opportunity to put something interesting at the point of sale that kind of pops off the shelf. And as long as the retailer is willing to allow you to do that, but why wouldn't they? And I imagine that the association is not only good for you, it kind of draws the eye in. Like, I'm a big cigar guy, and one of the only cigar brands out there, this company called Camacho, they had an agency do a rebrand for them, and they have really bright red, yellow, and orange tubes that their cigars are kept in.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally in the cigar world, everything is brown, everything is very classic, everything looks the same. So these Camacho cases that are very colorful, they just pop on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see your guys' stuff out in the wild, that, you know, those point of sale San Diego Wave, like, press-ons on the shelf space, it draws your attention in, and it was like, oh, cool. Yeah, so I'll learn more about that.
Love it. It helps us because, you know, kind of to Zeke's point, especially now, you know, the most important things for us are access, awareness, consumer trial,
mm-hmm.
and that credibility just allows the customer to get that much closer to, like, trying our wine.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to talk a little bit about the marketing strategy from a social media perspective as well. So what I love about your guys' social media is I feel like you guys are kind of wearing your entrepreneurial experience on your sleeve to a bit. You know, like, you guys are not just doing glossy, you know, videos with your winemaker and the farm to table stuff and the things that, you know, we know kind of from the wine industry, right? Like, that's like the typical marketing is usually culinary. It's usually very polished. It's usually very, you know, glossy. Yeah, exactly. It's pretentious, maybe some would say. It's the marketing to a certain, you know, type of client. Your guys' marketing, especially on social, as much as it's about the brand, it's also like, oh, you're documenting, like, walking into an account and somebody kicks you out in 15 minutes. Of like, kind of the ups and downs as an entrepreneur.
Nice.
And, you know, there's a great... that I just interviewed Jake Carls, the CEO of Midday Squares.
I saw that one, by the way.
Good one. It's a good one. Yeah. And he has this process that he calls Build Out Loud, which is basically, you know, let's do a reality, let's do a Shark Tank reality show about us as an entrepreneur bringing this product to market. And let's, as much as we can, document the good, the bad, the ugly, show everything, show the wins, show the losses. And look, I mean, you know, CNBC is basically the Shark Tank channel now. It's the entrepreneurs channel. And that's the only channel I stop on when I'm traveling and, you know, channel surfing in a hotel. Like, people love the entrepreneurial story now. So how has that been? Like, Zeke, you built a pretty massive brand on LinkedIn, 15,000 followers. Like, that's considered an influencer on LinkedIn. And you get pretty solid engagement when you put up not just about leadership, but just kind of funny, like, what goes and what doesn't right on LinkedIn right now. But that's something that we're very focused on as an agency, is thinking about like how LinkedIn is coming into its own as a social media platform. So that was a lot to throw at you guys.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, how you guys are approaching this perspective of documenting your entrepreneurial journey and making that part of the market.
Let me make one comment up front, and then you can dive in. I think if you pull back, you know, this kind of goes back to the ethos of Will's Corner. It's like, it's like great wine, no rules. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, just don't overthink it, drink what you like. And so when you were talking about, like, the imagery or the traditional marketing, you know, that usually comes from big wine, it is, you know, it's polished or produced. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a better way to say that. For us, it's extremely important to just be real.
Mm-hmm.
This is us. This is our life. This is our life's work. Like, we burn the boats. Like, we're, but on top of that, we want more people to enjoy wine, and that's never going to happen doing it the old way.
Yeah,
oh my
yeah,
God.
Right.
What's the amazing quote from, it was the CEO of Gallo or something. She was like, whatever, it was something to the fact that he'll crack me, but like, it was from the Rob McMillan's the wine report, but basically she was like, whatever big wine the wine industry's done for the past X amount of years, don't do that because it hasn't worked.
Yeah,
and so, right. And so, we just want wine to feel more tangible
mm-hmm.
and approachable to people. And so, you know, and so you can kind of dive into some tactical stuff now, but kind of back to your question is a very important thing for us is showing people different ways to, in different occasions, to enjoy wine that they're not used to seeing or
mm-hmm.
thinking of.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, a funny little story is I actually was at my two daughters and one of their friends took them to the opening wave at Sea Game. It was unbelievable, by the way. But, you know, just think of tailgating, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we pull up, we're in the parking lot, and I may or may not have, you know, had a can or two of Squirnos. in the car, you know, in the parking lot,
yeah.
Like, as I was talking to some folks or whatever, and we were walking into the game and saw some other people tailgating, there was this group of people that had the back of their trunk open, and they were obviously wine drinkers.
Mm.
But they literally were holding, like, these, like, fancy wine glasses. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, it's like people just ensure there could be a case to be made. And some people prefer it that way. Okay, fine.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But I think a lot of it is just how we're conditioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So they add a bottle and do the opener and then, I don't know.
Their food is probably great, too, and all that extra work. Okay, so let me see if I can remember. So it is the Silicon Valley Bank Wine Report. It comes out every year. Rob McMillan, shout out Rob McMillan, cares about the industry.
Yes.
And he's been ringing this bell like every year. And so every January comes out, I call it the industry freakout moment. And we wanted to do this thing, and I was like, all right, we got to do it now. And he posts, he's like, whatever we're doing is not working. We're losing
mm-hmm.
customers. So all these amazing bottled wines from Spain, Italy, France, the US, national, we can't even get there because the beginning of the wine journey is terrible.
Yeah.
So we're helping with the beginning part of the journey into there. So let's talk, and it was Stephanie Gallo who said, you have to learn another language to learn wine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to learn another language with beer or with spirits. Like,
yeah.
I go to the restaurant, I want a beer and food, take it. I want whiskey ginger, I want old fashioned, you can have that, I want RT. You go to wine, what vintage, what sauce, where's this coming from? Like, that's why we say no rules. Just enjoy it however you want. When you want. Okay, social media. So I see it in two bags. Like, the LinkedIn piece is more about just cans being efficient for business, speed of service, a fresh product, it's consistent. So really can adoption. And then part of it is like, we've had a lot of this experience building great cultures, hiring top talent, is I want to give away these things. So the building out in public for me is giving a lot of value to whoever's following our content, showing them the ups and downs of the entrepreneur journey, by the way, like a lot of loneliness, a lot of stress, a lot of things wrapped around with bonus files. Still very, very, very fulfilling. And then the can journey. And then I think on TikTok and Instagram, more of some law.
I'll keep it on. I'm just going to check the camera.
More
consumer
experience. So just showing people being engaged with the brand, with the company in the real world. And so I think, like Corey says, we are missionaries, not mercenaries. We are lovers of wine and of the community, and we just stick to that and the customer, all those things will work out.
Well said.
And we're back. All right. Awesome. No, I love that.
Mr. Collins. Right.
Yeah. We won't get into why my batteries weren't fully charged today.
We can.
All good. So yeah, no, I love that. I mean, I think you talked about the main issue that the industry is facing, which is declining customers, and I think. You know, it's the same things that have plagued a lot of legacy businesses with millennials and Gen Z, right? It's like they don't have time to play 4 hours of golf, you know. So golf was on the decline, at least before COVID, right?
Yeah.
And some of these, you know, legacy things that are don't feel approachable, don't feel accessible, don't feel welcoming, right? As a community, millennials have gone in the other direction, or Gen Z have gone in the other direction. So they've used traditional business models. And I think, you just need an approachable entry point, and that, it's like I told you guys in my 20s, I was part of a business called Young Winos, which is essentially a publisher and a wine club around the 21 to 29 consumer. And the wine industry loved us because, you know, we would get people into drinking wine and maybe they're, you know, $2 chuck right out of the gate, but at least they're entering early and young. And then as they kind of went through their palate and tasting things, and then in their 30s, they're buying $20 and $50 bottles of wine. In their 40s, they're buying $1,500 bottles of wine. So you get the consumer for longer, and as that consumer grows with wine, they're buying more expensive things. Their taste and income go up in parallel, hopefully. So you guys are giving consumers a great entry point, which I think will really help with the adoption of this younger generation that probably, like, because. You know, I've even heard from, helping you guys out a little bit with kind of early stage stuff on the influencer marketing side. You know, I found not many, but a few influencers that said, I'm more of a cocktail person. I don't really like wine. And, I think there's definitely that stigma attached to it. That it's just not culturally relevant to them or giving them an opportunity to experience it and a restaurant setting or at the beach or a ball game. I think that's a new entry point that consumers don't have. So
I think you nailed one is if you walked into a bar or restaurant and you wanted to get like a good glass of wine or $10, it's actually hard and confusing to do. I think we pumped out over 1,000 cases.
Wow.
So I did 24 packs, maybe we're around like 3,000 cans served. And I got to watch a lot of people drink the wine without knowing.
The blind test.
It's been amazing watching the experience.
Yeah.
I think people can't believe that this exists before. And look, for all these people, now they don't drink too much. You can start a little bit higher.
Yeah.
I see younger people drinking Jameson, Maker's Mark, Tito's. You're seeing like a beer like 805. You're seeing all these cool brands that are coming out, and like Cutwater out here in San Diego started one of those kinds here too. So just the beginning of this journey.
Yeah.
And as long as people continue to enjoy this with the burgers or to-go food or tacos, we're going to like we're really solving some for them. It's been awesome.
I love it. So let's dive a little bit deeper into the social media part, because that's a little bit of my expertise. So, when I first started talking to you guys about, what kind of influencers do you want to work with, you guys were pretty, specific. You wanted people here in San Diego. You wanted to reach that kind of trend-setting millennial to Gen Z, 21-plus, obviously, but the mom, that chief household officer, that mom influencer, not just the polished, like, nice mom influencer lives in La Jolla and has everything together, but like the real, the real, real. So can you tell me a little bit more about like, what do you guys see as like a good brand ambassador partnership, whether it's in What are you guys looking for, and what is your guys' approach to working with influencers, from how to give them creative license to be a good partner and a good steward of your brand?
I think we're learning, all of this stuff for being this close and kind of doing the brand out. How I look at it is the people, like our core customers, are beverage enthusiasts, like people that love using tea, tequila, coffee, whiskey, wine, beer. It's kind of all one same group. They're really passionate about beverage. And then foodies, a lot of, not everyone's a foodie, but many who love this is their passion to go to like all these cool restaurants and stuff. And then you have kind of like women who are kind of the core wine drinker too. So I think about all three of them. And then like, if we're building a quality product, then how do we kind of fit within their lives? And then how can the story be kind of told authentically? Like, I think you mentioned, we don't want it super polished, because we're kind of a to-go outdoor wine, we're to-go food. I want it to be a relaxed version of drinking wine, like having longer instead of like this super produced one. So don't know if it's a clear answer,
but
how we're there experiencing that, whether it's going outdoors, whether it's getting to-go food or in a restaurant, or maybe your kids finally go to bed and you got this 30 minutes, like we have. So that could be it.
Yeah, totally.
or at a kid's game, and now the kids are all playing, and I get like an hour and a half with a bird. It might be the only hour and a half I have all week, and I'm going to have a beer, that's fine. So however that fits with them, I want them to tell the story instead of us telling them.
Yeah, I love that.
And what I think to touch on is just the demographic part. And yep. I know we've mentioned it, but we can't mention it enough. Mm-hmm. Because really, what we since, and this, I'm just spitballing now, but literally since we met in 2001, we're doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get people not to overthink it. When we were on the floor, you mentioned we started an opera, and then we went to First Man's Mid Experience, Wine Director, Song GM, the new fancy Italian restaurant. So at that restaurant, we're in our suit and tie, and I'm literally just on the floor selling, in large part, very fancy, expensive wine to mostly businessmen and women that are on their corporate card, that are used to drinking good wine, but really don't know much about it anyways. So that situation, when you talk about like the business guy or gal, at a big kind of corporate event, drinking whatever, specialist, like whatever, we would use those opportunities, and we saw it even with those people, they were intimidating. So the most of what we would do, as a kind of table side song guy, is literally just kind of deconstruct what's in their head and guide them to something that they would enjoy. So the thing, we're still doing those things now. We're like, no, don't overthink it. Just don't overthink it. And then we're also obsessed about what they would like and thinking about it kind of from the consumer standpoint.
Yeah. And how important is an in-person trial? I imagine that's almost like the number one thing that's going to drive the brand, right, is getting it in the hand of consumers, whether that's through, a new account or through a tailgate activation that you guys will do at San Diego Waves, or working with Seaside Market and doing a tasting. Like, what's been your experience as far as like doing the kind of street team activation, so to speak, but getting the brand in the hands of the consumer?
I think getting it in front of like the right consumer is this moment. We did Soul Cycle, Waterways, and then the woman comes and tries, she's like, man, I wish this existed earlier. So I was like, yes! And so definitely it's the wine drinker of their group of friends too. Sometimes people ask them, right? Hey, what's this? It's good. And so if they're a fan and they touch our product, they're giving it to more. So
word of mouth.
Yeah. Definitely we feel like trials like super important, and it's like awareness, access, consumer trial.
And the trial is tricky because it's, fortunately, like, you have an amazing product that is over-delivered, in our opinion. But aside from that, there's this tricky part about seeing and thinking about drinking wine that's in camp.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that piece of it is tricky. So it makes it even more challenging to actually try it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, is that because, like I think you guys have told me, have some experiences where you'll be in an account and, you know, you'll be talking to the manager about the account, and then there'll be some customers sitting at the bar, and they'll just be like, oh, canned wine, you know, and then all you do is just say, hey, can I pour you a sip of it? And
I have a great story.
5 minutes later, they're flipped.
That's awesome.
There's a store here by the ocean, like 10 minutes away, nice store, sells a lot of fancy whiskey, tequila, wine. And he's kind of a hard-nosed guy, so before he walked in, I poured the wine in cups. Oh, and I didn't get it. He's like, what do we got here?
Mind it, baby.
And then goes through all the wines. And so in his mind, I was selling him a bottle. And he was like, yeah, what does this cost? Like $24, $25. Well, I got this, this, and this. And I pulled out the cans. And he was stuck telling me it was great, that he had other 30 options. And he was like, I was like, best one we ever tried. So just that part of it is the same thing that bottled and canned beer went, I think, 14 years ago. This transition.
Like the street top, you mean? The street top transition.
No, don't.
No,
beer. Oh,
right.
All bottled.
Oh, good point. Yeah,
now,
I never even thought about that.
We met.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, like back in the day, yeah, like it wasn't in those tall boys. Like unless you're buying, you know, Bud Light or something like that, right?
We met a brewery, a small local one. They're like, we're only cans. Like, no glass. She's like, no, we can't. We found that we can get better quality of this and this. And so we're like, okay. So that roadmap's there.
Mm-hmm.
I think High Noon, White Claw, like Eat LaCroix, all these liquid deaths. So
This
is just the oldest, latest industry. So I think it's going to happen quick. Once it goes, it's going to go fast.
Yeah. And is that sustainability component the liquid death pushes into? Is that true also for the wine industry that the cans are more
for
sustainable,
the
more recyclable? Because like I was talking to an influencer the other day, and they're like, yeah, you know, I hate when I see like broken glass, you know, on the train tracks on the way to the beach or like on a hike or something like that. You know, like glass still gets broken even if it is recyclable.
Yeah,
wine bottles aren't recyclable.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't realize
that. Wine bottles are recyclable. I don't want to be wrong with this data, but someone will correct you on the internet for sure. That like 70% of the carbon footprint is actually the temperature they're used to make glass.
Oh,
now,
wow.
I don't want to turn this against glass wine. Actually, I think bottled wine can go lower glass, can be more sustainable. I think there's amazing bottled wines that we want to get people to. So I don't want to make this cancerous bottle. I think the beginning part of the wine industry is very low quality, terrible wine that's overcharged. So let's just fix that and let's get people as a whole drinking wine. And then, like, the CEO of Anheuser-Busch, whatever you think about it, he came out and said, congratulations to this industry group supporting draft systems. Okay, so beer new. Let's do kegs and cans. Let's get out of trial and give you wine. Bottled wine made so much that they pushed away screw caps, they pushed away draft systems, they pushed away cans, and now they're seeing customer climb. So it's just like with baseball, the games were too long, Blockbuster Video, the fees, wine industry, long of the tooth, not understanding the consumer.
Yeah.
So now you're seeing this convergence. So traditionally our background is, and this is maybe a nuanced kind of thing for maybe some of your viewers, but put it simply, there's kind of like this bifurcation of wine and spirits in beer as far as the kind of the distribution networks are considered. And they're siloed to a large degree. You know, it's all converging, which is my point now. So it's getting more muddled, which is great. But before, it's like even the accounts they serve generally, and, you know, I digress. My point is, you know, now that we're in a can, we're, even though we're like traditional wine and spirits guys, it's so obvious to us how critical and important and valuable the beer distribution network is because of the work of, you know, the can footprint, that the work that's already been done, whether you're talking about RTDs or beer. And so it's the adoption is so much better. And especially where those cans play, it's like it only makes sense. So you will see, and you're already starting to see it, a lot of, you know, beer distributors, they're like, oh yeah, why is it $70? Is it a $1 million business? And most all the, you know, all most all of the beer accounts also are able to sell wine.
Yeah.
If not yours.
Why not do it?
And yeah.
That's interesting. So do you guys want to talk at all about direct consumer play? Because I know that was something that you guys probably weren't anticipating being able to do this early, but I know you guys have been circling some technology and some partnerships that are going to allow you guys to go direct to consumer a lot earlier than maybe you were initially thought. Do you guys want to talk about a little bit about
that? I think direct to consumer, like long term, and even Can's long term, is we have to think that population is decreasing. We're living in an automated world, mm-hmm. right? And so, even delivery with automated drivers, I'm going to go here, is going to lower cost. So I think D2C as a channel will always exist. But if you look at like Instacart, that model worked great in COVID, but now it's like a certain type of fluid neighborhood market.
People are paying attention to the fees a little bit more now than they were in COVID.
So we have D2C available. It is the same price that we're going to have in retail right now. I think long term, we build the customers one by one. We add value to them, whether that's a foodie group, whether that's the wine lover group. So we have to add value, continue to add the consumer, have an exceptional product. And D2C to me is just a channel. So it'd be a channel just like retail, just like restaurants. And if you're not in that channel, you're going to lose those customers. So how do we continue to grow that? And I think that there's going to be changes. There already are in the distribution model. With technology coming, so my plan on us kind of we plan on that one being a strong component, but we got to be good on D2C too. So it's got to be the value we add and the other stuff we add too, besides the product.
Yeah, I love that.
Couple things to kind of go on with what you said is we're learning. Mm-hmm. Like you're gonna help us. but to your point, we didn't anticipate the opportunities to go D2C. So he just kind of low-key announced it. We haven't formally announced, but I guess, I mean, technically right now on our website, we're available D2C.
Wow,
nationally.
So everybody's gone for the first time that you're outside of San Diego.
But the reason we haven't announced it yet is even though it's live and we tested it, there's just some aesthetic stuff on our native platform that we're going to clean up.
Make sure the user experience is perfect.
So hopefully before the listeners check it out, regardless, it doesn't matter, right? Sure, we're just trying to figure it all out. But it's different, right? Because at retail, you know, with our original, you know, go-to-market strategy, it's very localized because we're way more concerned with instead of going wide and broad to go deep.
Yeah.
Smart. To go deep. And we're way more concerned about like the pull through, which, you know, there's a lot there too. But now when you talk D2C, it's like, whoa, everything changes. The whole perspective changes. So the real answer is I don't know.
Should be interesting.
We'll figure it out.
I love it. And then on that note of the regional play, so you guys are Silicon Valley and San Diego for the launch. Do you guys want to talk about where you guys are going to go next?
Sure. Okay. I think Corey mentioned we want to go deep. We want to go neighborhood by neighborhood. And then we want to win. We want to really be, I always say, until you get 3 orders from accounts, you get 2 reorders. Reorders is all that matters. How does that matter to us?
Yep.
So it's D2C. Retail, restaurant, reorders matter. So if you get 2 reorders in like a 6-week period, you build customers, you're in a system, they're making money off you and they're giving your customers products. So I think we do that. We will expand out to the rest of Northern California. We'll go to Orange County, Palm Springs, and Los Angeles is just a monster. I'm working there. So when you're ready to go to LA, you have to be like all in committed, and that means Corey, I'll spend a lot of time there. So win California, then the next markets. Depends.
Yeah. Well, the exciting part about direct to consumer is maybe the audience will tell you where to, or maybe your direct to consumer accounts will tell you what territory.
Let's hear our first orders on D2C. Colorado, New Jersey, New York.
Florida, Texas.
So we had those
states
before a California order.
That's wild. So good. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, I know Corey's got some appointments to get to, so I don't want to hold you guys down for too long. So I think we can start to land the plane.
Cool.
What are you guys most excited about the next 6 months and the future of Los Cuernos?
You go start. I got the one thing I want to end this thing with, which if we make it super big, then this is going to live. I've been wanting to say this for a year.
Let's go. Let's go.
No. What do you, I do want to hear, because there's so much going on, like with this journey and like with Dr. Journey, like raising weight 2023. There's been severe highs and lows. Like people get the best version of us on camera. and I'm super grateful to be sitting next to someone so talented that like day to day just does a ton and makes my life easier. I didn't plan on going there.
Nice.
So I do want to hear kind of your view. We're very different people.
Yeah.
Like he is creativity, like artistic this, and I'm just math and numbers. In fact, I do not want to do any video. They make me. They make me do this. So going through the next 6 months, and I do want to say
the next 6 months. It's hard. It's a challenge for me to think that far ahead.
Wow.
And that's what
wow.
he's best at.
Yeah.
Kind of as more of the visionary. But you know, a few things that are just top of mind that are critical kind of benchmarks or kind of milestones for our company is, you know, a lot of this we're kind of largely engaged in right now, but it's finding like the distribution piece. You know, you mentioned the three-tier system, how nuanced it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in marketing, like access or distribution channels is one of the pillars, right? Well, in the wine and spirit or alcohol world, it's even more critical. And so it's important that we find like the right partners,
mm-hmm.
the right distributors, because how we work or how we think about it, it really, really matters. Like
mm-hmm.
you're basically kind of marrying somebody. And so that's one piece I cannot wait. And then also, you know, that there's a lot more of it that goes in with, you know, getting a distributor, which is a little less like, I mean, we'll always grind and bootstrap, but like it's there's help and support there.
Yeah, it opens up a lot of extra support and kind of take some of the heavy lifting off your hands to open up new accounts.
It's a little different, so I wouldn't say the heavy lifting. Like I work with distributors, and like we love them, we love working with them in different markets. Like for them, is they would have a great product, team behind it, and a sales strategy that's going to help their accounts make money. And so they get to go out and get wins, and then we get to get shortcut into these meetings. So together, when you're growing a brand together, it feels really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
When I think the second piece is I said this a lot, because we're looking for one, it's like, you just don't blame the distributor. Like they're literally an extension of you. And when you win together, there's really nothing like it. Like it's literally like just two groups that are just like,
yeah, it's kind of like a brand and an agency.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And it's when it all comes together.
That's awesome.
What were you going to say?
Even when we decided to do this company like 10 years ago, but I knew at some point I was going to talk about the reasons to buy this, and I wanted it to like live forever, because then we'd have to like live up to this. So there's three reasons why you should buy Los Cuernos.
Yeah.
The first one is we made better wine by design and great wine, no rules. In the simplest way, we lowered the cost basis by using a can, by going on vintage, doing this stuff and our expertise. So just from a pure math perspective, we made wine cheaper and by putting in a channel. So we made great wine available to people. Like, check, we did that. Okay, secondly, the great wine, no rules, is we have to get rid of all these rules about how the strength, container it's in, where. That's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff can actually be copied. So my opinion is the two bad wine companies who sold a bunch of this really poorly wine in plastic bottles, they're just going to poke a can of wine, take it to a lab, and they're going to copy as good as they can. So knowing that is the next two pieces of why someone should buy Los Cuernos. So you're initially going to buy it because it's a really good product. Okay, we did that. The second part is having a great company culture in the social media area post-pandemic is an advantage. And so we all know now which companies suck. Like we all know the majority of people I talk to are the most dissatisfied with their jobs that I've ever seen in my life. And this is across the industry. So what we're going to do is we're going to build a company that supports their employees and develops their employees. And then those are the two simplest ways I could put it. But we aspire to have a talent-dense organization, the right cultural flywheel, and then the development flywheel. And then if you do that, like, it'll be a company that we're all proud to work with. And then I think Glassdoor, employer reviews, and as we go out and say this, we'll prove it over time. And so, and then the third reason is our commitment to our partners, our communities, and our customers. And so if you think about like the San Diego Wave, we are now putting out 5,000 pieces of San Diego Wave collateral into San Diego.
Mm.
I'm wearing their shirt. We're going on social media. When we go to events, we work hard and we work hard for them. Okay, now we're going to work hard with consumers. And our goal is like add value, be easy to work with.
Yep.
You do that in this flywheel of an ecosystem. Eventually, wine is just going to be a commodity, but they're going to say, wait a minute. The product's good. Now I got a lower price. I got this. No, these are good human beings that take care of the people, treat them right, and they grow the community. And this is the chance for Gen Z and all these people to put their money where their mouth is. This is the company they've all asked for, and so we're going to try to build it. Are we going to be perfect? No. but I will say that we legitimately have built cultures that people have loved working at, and we're going to have a commitment towards that and aspire to be that. And so I hope this thing ages well. Maybe 3-4-5 years, because those are 3 points. We're going to make really good wine that's that people are going to like. Our people are going to get developed and work here, continue to go on, and we're going to be easy to work with, and we're going to add value to our partners. And those last two are fabulous.
I love it.
Yeah. Save that one.
I think the modern consumer, the new direct consumer, entrepreneur, storytelling-led brand, they make fans and friends, not customers.
Yes.
I think if you guys can do what you guys are doing, I think it's going to be wildly successful.
Yeah.
So thanks, guys. Appreciate you coming on the show. Anything else you want to plug or let people know now that DTC is up so they can actually go and buy some?
You know, just hang around for the journey as we try to figure it out.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Give us a follow on Squirrels Wine. Send us messages. We'll answer it. And if you're questions around enjoying the wine, let us know. We'd love to talk to you.
Awesome.
Thanks, Dylan.
All right, guys. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, wherever you happen to be listening or watching today, don't forget to subscribe. And if you would be so kind to leave us a review, that's how the show finds a wider and bigger audience. And most importantly, if you have a colleague or a friend or somebody you think would either enjoy my conversation with Corey and Z today or maybe enjoy a can of Los Fairness, don't forget to share the show.
Let's go.
Until next time, thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Right, awesome. That's the wrap.
Why don't we not co-CEOs?
Oh, he just recorded that. Okay, we